Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, May 31st, 2018. And with me today, I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing well today.
It's good to have you here. And John Martellaro, I hope you are well.
I am. It's good to be here as well.
Good to be here. And thank you before the show for pointing out that it was leap year. So I got the date right.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yeah. Listeners, John tries to trip me up on the date pretty much every time.
Almost every time.
And it hasn't worked yet. Although when I have flubbed the date, I have to take full responsibility myself.
You flubbed the date from CES and I wasn't there to hear it.
I know. Isn't that awesome? Yeah. Anyhow, hey, let's talk about this thing with Apple hiring up gobs of Intel engineers. And when I say gobs, right now they've hired like a little over 20, and they're engineers from Intel and from a few other technology companies in Oregon, and they're going to be working in this lab that Apple's setting up in Oregon. And of course, Apple isn't saying what it's for. So people are speculating, and the speculation is, well, you know, people from Intel and some other chip makers. So this is a lab where they're going to be working on chips and maybe chip designs. And so then the natural progression takes people right to, aha, we now know where Apple is designing their ARM-based MacBook. And so I thought we should kind of explore this a little bit, and who better for the discussion than you, John, and Andrew.
Yay.
So, John,
I've only heard maybe like one or two rumors about an ARM Mac. So what's going on in that area?
John can fill us in on that.
Yeah, I wrote an article yesterday, Andrew, about how Apple might approach an ARM-based Mac, and my theory was that it would be a very limited production. It would be something like perhaps a non-mainstream desktop, like a MacBook that was small and light and was the physical size and weight of an iPad Pro, so that they could put an ARM processor in it and use an iPad-like touchscreen and had to attach a keyboard, and it would be a hybrid machine. It would look like a MacBook, but it would have a touchscreen and an ARM processor. So I went into the details of how Apple might approach that yesterday in an article. And by doing it as a lightweight travel machine where people could run iOS apps, it would be also suitable for education, where students would have access to education apps and instructional iOS apps. And if it didn't go over well, it would be no big deal because it wouldn't impact the rest of the product line at all. And Apple could just write it off as a mad experiment. There's no way in my mind Apple's going to do a total migration of its lineup from Intel to ARM like they did from PowerPC to Intel. So that was the gist of it. And the fact that they're hiring these engineers, just could mean that they're ramping up their own in-house design for the ARM processors. And what they're after is in this design certification is when you lay down the deposition for the dies and you lay out these transistor traces and circuits, you have to do some testing to make sure that it's operating as intended. So you have to attach electronics and look at the traces, look at the electrical impulses, look at the functionality of the chip, make sure it's doing its computations, that there's no malfunction in the deposition process that hoses things up. Because these parts are 10 nanometers in size, like the transistor gate, and the traces are 10 one billionth of a meter in size. And so if there's any contamination or irregularity or fault in the process, the CPU isn't going to function as intended, and so things are going to go wonky, and the operating system is going to be depending on the CPU to do things that it cannot do, right? And things are going to go very wrong. So that's the process of the of the verification. And something that sometimes there's just an outright error in the design where, you know, Intel's had this in the past in mathematics, where some engineer just made a mistake in translating mathematical algorithms into transistor structures. And you were actually, in some odd situations, you were getting actual mathematical errors because of the design implementation, not the fabrication. So that's another part of the testing that has to go on to make sure that everything went right.
So I have a hypothesis, which I've brought up before, which is that Apple will add more ARM chips to the Mac and ultimately give us a hybrid machine where you have an ARM processor that's handling a lot of the system level stuff. And then you have the Intel processor that's handling the application stuff, and they work together and you end up with a machine that runs a lot faster and can have a lower power consumption.
Frumpwoggle.
And apparently John disagrees, but I like how it sounds. And some of these, at least some of the engineers that Apple's hiring are engineers that that need to be familiar with the whole process of validating that the finished product matches the specifications of the original design, which sure fits well with chip engineers that know how to make sure that a completed chip is actually functioning the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, I think that sounds more plausible than what John was saying. But at the same time, when John was talking, that got me thinking, if this is going to be some hybrid Mac, I wonder if that's related to the rumor about Project Marzipan iOS apps running on Mac.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
And, you know,
to distinguish the two. You know, in the article I wrote yesterday, there is this concept of having an ARM-based Mac. And my theory, it's ARM only, and there's no additional Intel chip. And then you recompile Mac OS for ARM. I'm sure that's already running. I'm sure it's been running for years in Apple laboratories. And then you have an option in the compiler that where you can target either the Intel or the ARM chip for your Mac app. But the Marzipan project is, or have a fat binary. But the Marzipan project is something a little bit different, and that's where you have an iOS app that you can target for iOS and run on ARM and be touch sensitive, as I understand it, or you can target it for a Mac and be responsive to mouse and trackpad. And so that's a different button that you press to make an iOS app run in either the Mac environment or the iOS environment. And that's to help developers so that they don't have to have a different set of code for their Mac application and their iOS application. They can have one set of code and then target it based on the UI that's going to be used. So that's something that's slightly different, but that could still come into play in, as Jeff describes, a hybrid machine. So how that's all going to play out, we don't have a clue.
No. And everyone is focused on the CPU, but I think a lot of people are forgetting that if you're using Intel's chipset for laptop, even if you have a separate graphics card, you still have the built-in graphics coprocessor that comes with Intel's chipset. So when you're running on your battery, you're not using the power-hungry graphics card. You're using Intel's graphics chip. That means Apple needs to be really ramping up their graphics chip designs if they're expecting that they're going to have a Mac that's not using Intel's chipset. So that's another thing they have to be working on.
I forgot, Jeff, is that a feature only of the 15-inch MacBook Pros, or you have two graphics processors? Or does that appear in the 13-inch as well? I forgot for some reason.
You know, that's funny. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. I think in the MacBook Pro 13 and 15-inch, you get a separate graphics card. In the MacBook, you do not.
Right. That's for sure.
And,
so, oh, does ahead, Apple's A series chips have this graphics card?
Apple does have their own graphics processor technology that they're using on the iPhone and iPad. So they would have to beef that up so it can handle the graphics needs of a laptop. Well, and potentially a desktop Mac as well.
That'll be years down the road. If they do anything with ARM, they'll do it on the portables, because that's where I wrote in the article that for a lot of people, they've discovered that a big screen iPhone and a MacBook Pro is all they need. And a tablet in the middle is sort of a luxury that maybe hangs around the house and use with the kids or a second screen. But when you travel, you certainly don't take an iPad and a MacBook Pro and a phone with you in most cases, I don't think.
You don't travel like me.
Maybe an iPad mini.
When I travel, I have a MacBook Pro, an iPad mini, and an iPhone.
Oh my, I think you're an exception, Jeff.
I probably am. I probably need some sort of intervention. Yeah. Anyhow, so right now we're at the place where we can only speculate about what's happening at this Oregon lab, but it clearly involves something with chips because of the type of people Apple is hiring. So my assumption is this is either a new sort of chip thing that's going into existing products, or these people may be working on processors and other chips that are going into products that Apple hasn't even announced yet.
I like your theory about beefing up the A-series graphics for the MacBook series, MacBook Pros, eventually. That'll be a big project.
That'll be a very big project. Yeah. Yep. All right, I'm going to jump us to another topic now. And what I want to talk about, Andrew, you brought this up before the meeting, and I was just immediately fascinated. And let me see if I remember this right. There was a guy that kind of freaked out after he did his data download request from Apple to see how much stuff Apple had. And he found years of browser history. And he was kind of uncomfortable with
that. He had this big Twitter thread. And he said his browsing history contains detailed logs on like URLs, maybe some other information for up to 4 years in his data download. And so I replied to him and I said, well, as far as I know, I don't think Apple deletes anything unless you do on your end, because I set my Safari preferences to download or to delete my history after a day, and my browsing history wasn't included in my data download. So I was trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, and my assumption is that he has multiple devices, and he has set one of them to delete his browser history at whatever interval he wanted, but the other one isn't set that way. So he's getting this extended browser history from another device. And
I wonder if it's maybe from an iPhone or an iPad.
Because I was just looking at the preferences on Safari on my iPhone. And I cannot find history control on the iPhone.
I'm not sure because when you delete website and history data on your iPhone and you have iCloud Sync turned on, that deletes it from all devices. But I'm not sure if it works the other way around, where if you have your Mac set to delete it after a certain day, if that also spreads to the iOS devices. I wasn't sure about that.
And I don't know either. Some of the stuff about the way Apple is syncing data is kind of murky. And it can be really hard to tell what exactly is propagating across devices and what isn't. So,
First of all, on the iPhone, you've got a clear history and website data that clears your browsing history and your cookies. Mm-hmm. But you don't have control over how often it happens, or like on on Safari on the Mac, like clear it after 1 week or 2 weeks. So it's a one-shot thing. And as you said, when you clear that history there, if you have iCloud data for Safari turned on, whether that syncs across devices, we don't know. But one of the things I do is I try to keep my machine separate and discrete, and I only turn on capabilities on each device that I need, because I don't want to get wrapped around the axle with having strange things happen on another machine that I don't know why it's happening, because I've allowed them to cross sync and do things without my permission. So each machine has its own set of preferences, and I tend to leave iCloud data turned off for most things except calendars and contacts, where that's very convenient, and I want to have my calendars and contacts always synced across devices. But for everything else, machines just tend to be sort of task-specific, and so I tend to leave that stuff turned off until I need it, which I think is a good strategy.
I like that strategy.
Just for me. It's just something I do.
Yeah, why push data around that doesn't need to be pushed around? I mean, that does make sense. For me, I have a lot of data that I need to have pushed around. Because for me, it doesn't matter what device I'm using. It needs to function as closely as possible to every other device I have.
Because you're highly mobile. And so when you pack up and go to Panera, you need to have everything work in the same way it was at your office.
That's true. Yeah. Even if I'm taking just an iPad or just my iPhone, I want it to work as closely as it does to the way that things work when I'm sitting at my desk. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But if we have time, so that he mentioned another important thing in that Twitter thread. So I remembered when this happened, but about a year ago, this company called Alcomsoft, they make this iPhone forensic software. And so they found in one of the iCloud backups, you know, this detailed browsing history. And once it got enough media attention, Apple said that they would change that and start deleting it after 2 weeks. So either they haven't started doing that or something else is going on. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, we do have control over what's happening with our synced browser history. And and then also with our local browser history, at least on our Macs. So I'm assuming that the data that was accessible, that Apple said they're changing, that's independent of what we're seeing right now.
And we don't know about his account status either. Maybe he changed Apple ID along the way, or maybe there was a conflict, or maybe the Apple system didn't get updated properly based on some changes he made. So we don't really know.
Right. Yeah,
we don't. That's what I'm thinking too.
But what we do know.
There's still some unknown element.
True. Yeah. But what we do know is that we do have a way to manage how long our browser history is stored for our Mac. And Andrew, can you walk us through how you change that setting for Safari?
Yeah. So on your Mac, if you go into Safari Preferences, which you can do by hitting the Command key and the Comma key, or, you know, going to the menu bar. And so once you open that up, in the General tab, in about four or five items down, you'll see Remove History Items. And so it's a menu, and you can control that. So you can have it automatically clear your history after 1 day, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 1 year, or manually. So if you do it the manual way, I'm assuming that it won't delete unless you do.
Okay. And so I just went and looked, and I'm set to 2 weeks, which seems reasonable for the things that I do. And I just thought of another troubleshooting thing that people should do if they're finding that their browser history is sticking around a lot longer than they expect. Maybe the plist file that keeps that setting is corrupt. So change the time. Oh. And then like quit Safari so you really know everything's been written. Relaunch Safari, change the setting back to what you want, and see how it runs.
Also, in Safari, you can hit Command Y, and that will let you see your history. And you can sort through it and clear it there, too.
Nice. Okay, so you can selectively delete from your history that way, right?
Yeah, if you just select it and hit the delete key, it'll just manually delete that entry.
All right. I can see where for some people, and for some troubleshooting, that could be really handy. All right. Hey, we are out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thanks for being here today.
Hey, it was fun. Nice to be here.
It's always fun with you guys. Andrew, I'm so glad you're here.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
And yep, thanks for being here. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.